to another episode of RenCast. I'm your host, Bobby Mitchell. We're joined by Jake Raby, Flat Six Innovations, and Lake Speed Jr., Vice President for Sales and Marketing for Total Seal Piston Rings. Today, we're following up on our discussion where we ended last time on talking about people that have the high-performance sports cars like the Porsches, and they take them to the track, and they're trying their best to tweak them and tune them to squeeze as much performance as they can out of their cars. So, Lake, I'll start with you. What are some things that you need to be thinking about if you want to squeeze as much power you can out of these cars when you take them to the track?
You have to be willing to push the edge, right? If you're a guy that's, you listen to this or whatever it is, and you're wanting to push the edge of performance, and you hear us talking about this, and you're saying you guys are so negative about it, and it's kind of this, angsty attitude. It's like, no, it's called realistic. We are willing to walk all the way up to the edge, like that, like your buddy in the old days sitting on the bumper, with his hand on the distributor, twisting it till it hears a thing ping and back it off. If you're not willing to look it in the eye and walk up there, get your hand burned a little bit to find what that edge is, you're never going to go fast. It's that simple. Yeah. If you're dead serious about going fast, you're going to have to pay the price, and you're going to have enough resolve to look it in the face and know what it is and know that it's going to bite you sometimes, but you're going to be okay to deal with it. You're not going to be, if you want to just be all show, be a show card guy, right? I mean, I know it's not bagging on any of the guys we race with, but there's some guys who go racing. Their stuff is beautiful. It's perfect looking, and it's slow.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. It happens. It's a running joke, like the GT3 driver, right? He's a drag racer. He is on the track for the straightaway. A lot of them come around Atlanta, that long back straight. They love it. And then as soon as that dude hits 10A,
game
he's
over.
Not driving anymore. Exactly. He just wants to get out there, and he wants to hammer down at 7 and hold it balls out all the way to 10A and break as late as he can. That's all he wants to do. He parks at the corners. From turn 2 to turn 7, he sucks. Okay? It's just what happens. But after that, he's going to make up for everything. And he don't even care if he's slow in that part of the track. But that's just what we see. They're compensating sometimes, as we say. Mm-hmm. But like you said, when Lynn used to race SCCA with a 914, okay, in F production, I used to have that same feeling you were talking about with your dad's crew chief, right, or your dad's engine builder. I hated going to the track. It was the most stressful time ever. I was more stressed out then than I was as a Marine doing everything with nothing on a ship, flying helicopters that were patched up and things that we knew were patched up because we had to do it. That was like, okay, if I end up in the drink, I end up in the drink. It is what it is. And, maybe they'll find us. With that, that was one thing. With the racing thing, from the time that car, when they called us to the grid, from that time on, I didn't eat or drink anything. My stomach felt like it was being wrung out. I was so stressed until that car came off the track. And then if we won or if we came in second or whatever, and we might get torn down, I was even worse because there was a ton of gray area shit going on in there. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And then sometimes the tech inspectors were guys that had friends that built those engines, and I didn't want them to see what I'd done.
Course.
So that's the other thing. So yeah, it was the most stressful thing ever. And you'd be watching in amateur racing like we're doing, a lot of times the timing and scoring sucks because we had 4 or 5 classes going on at once. If you weren't the overall leader, you didn't even get on the grid pylon, a score pylon. Right. So I'm sitting there with 2 stopwatches and we're doing trap speeds. And if I see that car come, if it's a second slower, even if he had traffic or something, I'm like, man, that bitch is blowing up.
It's going away.
It's going away. One time, one lap, it's just 1 second off the pace. I'm like, shit, it's coming apart. And then we go to Roebling Road, and we build this crazy engine. I cut 4 pounds off the crankshaft, and He comes through turn nine. The crank breaks in four pieces and grenades the entire engine. And we take it apart, the trailer, and fix it that night, put it back together again. But, yeah, that's – until you've done that, you don't really get it. And, like, you know, Tony Callis, our friend Tony, you know, the things he's done, 24-hour stints of that in Le Mans, at Daytona, that's amazing. I can't imagine that. You know, people look at a lot of enthusiast people that have never been part of a race team like that. They have no idea what that would be like. And you and I don't either with that. But I can only imagine the stress level that you've got.
That's why Tony's so high strung.
Yeah, you've been preparing for months and weeks, and then now you got to stay up for 24 hours. I mean, that's hell. So, and I want to start off by saying that this episode of Rencast is brought to you by Arrogant Bastard Ale, even though it really isn't. Because we had a guy actually go on and say that Bobby and I were just excreting this arrogance. And I'm like, dude, Bobby's like the least arrogant person in the world.
Really? We're just having a good time.
On top of that, I'm a Marine. I'm supposed to be arrogant. I'm supposed to be an asshole. And you've got to love to hate me, right? So it is what it is. But at the same time, you know, that same guy last year had some good things to say about us, right, Bobby? He was like, "Oh, well, that was." But let me tell you the difference. Last year, he got free help from us. That when he said that, you know, all those good things, he was getting a free lunch. This year, the entitlement was over, so we end up being arrogant bastards. That is the problem with our society today. If we are not giving you something, we are the people who are being arrogant and greedy and all that sort of thing because we are not giving you something for free. Well, guess what? Tonight, folks, you got a hell of a lot for free.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh,
it was fun.
I mean, yeah.
You know?
I mean, we get emails and questions all the time about why do we have to, you know, why we're selling an M9X for what, you know.
Well, hey, okay, here's a question. In all these Rencasts we've done, have I mentioned anything about me having a special on engines or selling engines? I don't give a shit if I sell an engine. I don't care. They sell themselves. Somebody's car blows up. They want to keep it forever. They call Jake. Hey, man, I just bought this car 3 weeks ago. By the way, I got ripped off because it had cylinder bore score and the guy didn't tell me about it. But anyway, I want to keep this bitch forever. What am I going to do? Well, you call me. I'm going to build you an engine, and I'm going to treat you like a king while I'm doing it. But if you don't buy something from me, you never get to that point. You never understand our communication level. You never understand our proficiency level. You never understand any of the things that we do to make sure that engine is the best thing you can buy, because at the end of the day, you're not buying that one engine. You're buying the last 18 years of those engines where we learn with it. But no, I don't come on here and try to sell anything. I got all kinds of stuff I could try to sell somebody, but I don't do it. Do I sit here and try to sell a Nicosil cylinder for LN? No, I show you the one that they built that blew a hole through it.
Yeah. Well, and I can testify to the being a customer, you know, because we did. That wasn't a free engine, right? When we did the test for Driven, that wasn't like, hey, Jake, give me a free motor, right? We paid for the motor, right? We bought the car, and we were treated first class, not just because we're friends, right? I mean, it's those guys did it because that's how they do it with everybody. You know, you do things the right way because it's what you're paying for, right? You pay for something, you get it in return. And like I said, you get what you pay for in life always.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, absolutely. And I mean, that's – I see it all the time on these forums and on Facebook. People are just vendor haters. You know, I wish they would sit down and think about where they would be with these cars if there was no LN, no flat six, no driven oil – none of this stuff. If you were depending on Noble None and you were depending upon anything that the factory would give you, where would you be with these cars? Where would you be? Okay? We would be stuck with the same pieces that are causing problems. But people don't look at it that way. You know, they don't think about the fact that with IMS bearings, going back 10 or 12 years ago, it was never a question about, well, you know, I don't know which one of these products to choose. I'm going to go explore my options, which I get sick of freaking hearing that, just like I'm going to do my research. It's the same bullshit, right? But back then, it was like, well, hey, you know, can I really change this bearing? These people over here say that they can change it, but the factory says it's impossible to change and it has no part number. Who am I going to believe? Well, 10, 12 years later, we've proven that you can change this bearing over 50,000 times, even though the factory never told you you could. So that's just one of those things. But at the end of the day, as long as people are getting something for free and you're kissing their asses and you're doing all the things that everybody else does to them that wants to sell them something, they will love you. But if you tell them that the glass isn't half full, the glass isn't half empty, the glass just isn't big enough, okay? They don't like that. And they don't like that we do business with no fine print. And they don't like the fact that I'm blunt and I'm direct and I treat these people the way that I would expect to be treated if I had the same questions with the same level of concern. That's just what they don't like. And it's not everybody. Trust me, it's not everybody.
Yeah.
But it's enough people that it ruins my day, and it makes me glad that through this whole Corona thing, I've been stuck at the training facility because I haven't had to hear the phone ring one freaking time in 7 weeks.
Well, it's like the old expression, the squeaky wheel gets the oil, right? So,
well, let me throw one thing out here real quick. You know, Jim Collins, who's, you know, a very famous author, business researcher guy, you know, that wrote the book Good to Great. You know, one of the things that in that book that they identified that, you know, was one of the hallmarks of an organization that could provide, you know, great results is that they were willing to confront the brutal facts. They wouldn't hide away from the ugly. You had to call ugly what it is and deal with it. Didn't mean you were intimidated by it, but you could address it and deal with it. And I think that's, you know, sometimes that, you know, Jake gets it, I get it sometimes, you know, that they're like, well, you know, you're a jerk. I'm like, I'm not a jerk. I'm willing to confront the brutal facts. And when you can look at it and see with the same clarity, not rose-colored glasses, of what this is, then we can begin to have a real honest discussion. And it may seem like this is a big, giant, long rant tonight, but the reality is when you're going to spend that kind of money on a vehicle like this, there's no reason to do anything less than the best. You bought a Porsche for a reason, because you wanted that experience. You wanted that car. You're invested. It's like, would you want your stockbroker to say, all things are, you know, unicorns and fairy tales, let's go buy some more stock right now. Here, buy some index funds. That's going to work really great for you, you know, back in January. No, you want someone that can confront the brutal facts, and that's the person you can trust. That's the person you want in your foxhole, is the person that's going to be honest about what's over there across that field, not someone that's got, you know, a fairy tale view on some things. So sometimes, you know, honesty can come across and seem like you're being a jerk. No, we're just being honest with you. You know, you're invested, we're invested, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think for a lot of the enthusiasts, you know, the engine is so unknown to them. But they don't want to admit it. You know, they will spend thousands of dollars on high-end wheels and tires, mm-hmm. and performance sports seats. And, you know, there's guys that will have the interior redone in full leather and put a roll bar and thousand dollars and all this other stuff. But then they freak out when they have some engine failure and they have to spend $5,000 or $6,000 to have their Porsche flat six engine repair. They go, I'm being robbed. Wait just a minute. Go ahead. Yeah,
so check this out. So I'm not one that advertises very much, but I did this ad back in 2008, right? And tick, tick, boom, the only IMS retrofit available, okay? And it's got it all here. Now, this is the only ad that I've ever framed because it's the only ad that I've ever done that worked. I don't even advertise anymore. I haven't for years, okay? But this freaking ad worked because it was the brutal, honest fact of the engine was ticking at that time. And still today, Bobby, you've seen on some of these forums where people bitch about that ad. They still remember that from 2008 even. So it really worked.
That brings up a question from one of our viewers, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Casey Crosby just sent us a note saying, talking about the IMS bearing problem, and more specifically, your invention of the IMS solution. And here's what he says. He says, I think you have a great product, but I don't
But.
That's what he's saying. He's going to but.
But people don't realize that when you say the word but, you just omitted the validity of everything before that. So don't even bother saying it. If you're going to put a but in there, just don't even say it.
Yeah.
Just skip it. Okay, go ahead.
All right. So he says, but I believe the other design implying the ball bearings, the normal bearing that was, you know, put in the car from the factory. It's not as bad as you say, Jake. And then he goes on to say, jet engines use ball and roller bearings that are sprayed with oil to cool and lubricate. If oil flow is lost, the bearings will fail fast. Your average jet engine experiences many more cycles than any Porsche engine. Your response.
So, A number one first, those bearings
are sprayed. I want to answer the question.
Well, on top of that, they're not just sprayed. They're not just sprayed with oil. They have pressure-fed delivery of that oil to where it belongs, okay? I've built T-58 GE-16 turbine engines for CH-46 helicopters. I've done it on board ship, and we've done it more than once, okay? So, yes, and I've pulled oil samples from those just like we pulled from these, okay? You're comparing apples to grapefruits. You're comparing soccer balls to basketballs. It's a completely different thing because the biggest thing that jet engine does not have that we have is hydrocarbon problems, right, Lake?
And it doesn't have one of these.
It doesn't have piston rings, okay? That is the biggest thing. All the things going on with your combustion are isolated from those ball bearings. The oil we used in those jet engines was Miltac LTAC 23699. Indelible in my mind for 27 freaking years. So I don't know if the guy that wrote that question knows what Mil-L-23699 actually is, but it is a 30 weight jet engine oil. And that's all we used was a 30 weight. Didn't matter if we were in the desert, didn't matter where we were. We used a 30-weight engine oil in that thing. So, Lake, go ahead.
So that's the whole point, like you said, is that the internal combustion engine, right, what we're dealing with the IMS situation is completely different than a turbine engine because of combustion exposure, right? And it is those combustion gases. It's the stuff that gets by the ring, those hydrocarbons, the soot that gets by the rings, that gets into the oil, that creates the acids. And those are the things that damage the seal that then is the first domino to fall in the IMS bearing failure from the factory. Is once that seal is compromised, now that greased bearing is compromised. And that's what people don't realize, is that a lot of times it's that short trip driving. It's like Jake said, it's a 12,000 mile car. Yep, that's the worst one ever because all it ever did was idle around dead cold with ethanol fuel in there. So you got water, you've got fuel, you've got all of these things creating acids in there that are attacking that seal, which is plastic, degrading that seal, shrinking the seal. Once the seal shrinks, now all the grease washes out because the grease is in there, not because grease is a better lubricant, it's because grease is designed for that speed of that bearing that is different, right? So now the grease is washed out, now you've got oil in there, and because it's acting like a filter, it's capturing all the debris. That's what kills the bearing. is that understanding that if you don't know what the first domino to fall is, you can't possibly understand how to fix the problem on the end when the last domino fell.
It's just like the right oil, right time, right place, right quantity, all that. That's lubrication 101.
Yep.
Okay, so I'm gonna give you a fact here. Okay, going back to the jet engine stuff. This will be very interesting. My roommate, 1996, at Marine Corps Air Station El Toro, his name's Jimmy Schoen, okay? This guy was a piece of work. And we were working late one night. I usually work night crew. We had birds coming in. We had stuff going on. He wanted to go to Vegas, right? So he's like, man, my truck really needs an oil change. And he's like, I'm just afraid it's going to blow up. It's been making these noises and stuff. There's no telling how long it's been since he changed the oil. He goes, what do you think we should – he's like, what do you think it would do if we put some of this jet engine oil in it? I'm like, hell, I don't know. Try it and see. So he goes and gets a oil filter, brings it back, pulls it inside the freaking hangar. Everybody's gone. He dumps out the oil, dump in the Mil L23699. He doesn't even make it out the back gate of the freaking base before it had a rod knock. Killed it dead. Because that oil was not the right oil at the right place, the right time, the right quantity for an internal combustion engine, and it was a 4.3-liter V6. Yep. You know, an old S10 is what it was. And it hated it, okay? Because it wasn't designed for that. And it died within 2 miles. It's done, okay? So you can't compare the jet engine to that. Because also, you don't have reciprocation in a jet engine. It's all dynamic, you know? And it's spinning crazy RPM, don't get me wrong. It's a hell of an application.
There's no balancer on it.
As you mentioned before, exactly. Is that lubrication is a part of the equation, but also the load on the bearing in this application.
The load is the killer. The load is what requires a heavier grade of lubrication. It's just like what I say in the RenVision videos, where everybody says, well, you know, if it's just load, then this guy over here who's got a freaking aquarium in the back of him he's shooting his videos, it needs to be clean, by the way. He's talking about it's a lubrication problem. Well, you know, what's this guy done? Not a lot. Okay. He knows, don't get me wrong, he knows a lot about these cars, but from an engine perspective, no. Yeah, I wouldn't hire him. Let's just put it that way. So at the end of the day, he's talking about it's a lubrication problem. But at the end of the day, what solves that and what dispels that is the class action lawsuit, the Eisen versus Porsche class action lawsuit that says the single row 6204 bearing was a problem, and Porsche agreed that bearing failed in 8% of the cases as a single row bearing. Meanwhile, the dual row bearing that was a predecessor to that had a less than 1% failure rate as agreed to by both sides in that settlement. It is a dual row bearing. It has twice as many wear components in it, okay? Twice as many. So if it truly was a lubrication problem and that was the only issue we had, wouldn't that dual row bearing have the higher failure rate? Because it requires more lubricant to cool it and to lubricate it because it has twice as many wear components. So the fact that that bearing fails less and the fact that that bearing has twice the load carrying capacity proves conclusively this is a load problem. Lake, what do you think?
It's spot on. So it goes back to what I was saying is that it's – you know, right oil, right place, right time, right amount. The Strybeck curve is viscosity times speed divided by load. If you take away those contact points, right, you cut the number of contact points that can hold the load, you increase the film thickness requirement, right? Yes, why is a greased bearing? All these things come together. You know, most things aren't a single thing that caused the failure. It's the confluence of a couple of things coming together that creates a failure. So you got a single row bearing, which means you have all the load, and people don't think there's load in the shaft. That is a balance shaft. That's what the intermediate shaft is. It's a balance shaft. There is dynamic forces. There's chains on that side flipping all around, right?
So there's dynamic forces on there. They're pounding it. When you've got that smaller area, so higher load, more impact, and then you have the seal that's keeping that grease in there fail, there's no way this thing's not going to fail, you know, because now you've got... Yeah.
And just adding what you're saying, like when Jake's team pulled my bearing, the shaft was filled with just molasses looking mm-hmm. oil. And the seal around the bearing had shrunk and it had been compromised.
Yeah.
So all the original factory grease was eliminated. So now I presume that it's not getting, like you say, it's not getting adequate lubrication. The grease is gone. It's under the load, and it wouldn't be long in this application that shaft, that bearing would have failed, taking the engine with it.
Yeah, cool. Well, and it was also a single row. Okay, yeah, so yeah, so here
it was a 204.
Exactly. That's what this is. This is a factory single row bearing right here. This is the one I use in the RenVision videos. Okay, see how big this is? Now, see how big the dual row is?
Mm-hmm.
This sucker requires twice as much lubrication as this one does, roughly twice as much, to get the same ability to maintain lubrication and cool running. But this one doesn't blow up except for 1% of the time. This one blows up 8% of the time. And these are numbers going back to 2013, which are not accurate today, because we're seeing a lot more of these dual rows fail because people think that they can leave them in service because they think that they're stronger than they are, but they were strong until they got 20 years old.
Right.
Okay. But that
they
shows
wear
you
out
the difference.
Eventually.
Yeah. Look at that difference right there. Okay. Huge, huge difference. It's not even, you know,
one can carry over twice the amount of load because it's got twice the amount of surface area, more yeah, surface area. And you can carry more load.
And then that one fails less than 1% of the time. So this points to load, period. It points to load, period.
Well, let's move on to the next question.
All right.
This was regarding bore scoring. And this was in response to your videos and your comments made on RenCast regarding cylinder bore scoring. It's from James Richardson. He starts off by saying, "I'm disappointed slightly, as I was under the impression that cylinder bore scoring was eliminated from early 2006. I thought it became less and less of an issue and was engineered out by Porsche. As I drive a 2008 Cayman, I'm back in the loop. On a brighter note, my car has covered 92,000 miles and it had a bore scope carried out by its previous owner at 88,000 miles, which was all clear. Would I be correct in assuming that those 90K miles will stand with me well in thinking that if my engine was going to start scoring, it would have already happened long before now, and it won't happen to my engine?"
No. Nothing. Okay, so right away, this guy, no. Okay, this is the thing, and I hope he's listening to this now, because he wants somebody to tell him what he wants to hear.
To hear. Yep.
That's what he wants to have happen. And I'm not going to do that. I would make a really poor doctor. I would tell people they were going to die. It is what it is. We're all going to die anyway, right? Okay. But at the end of the day, he wants somebody to tell him that this isn't as bad as it is. And it's not all doom and gloom. His engine has already seen a hell of a lot more miles than the two I have here right now at the training facility that I'm doing engine installs on. One of them has 13,000 miles on it, and one of them has 41,000 miles on it. That's it, okay? So he's covered more than double that. So more than likely, he should have some symptoms if he has anything to worry about imminently. Now, there is one question I've got. When this bore scope was carried out at 88,000, did they just come through the spark plug hole? Okay. Or did they come through the spark plug hole and use my method of going through the sump to look at both sides of the picture? I almost guarantee you they pulled the spark plugs out and they went through the spark plug holes. They did that test at bottom dead center, okay? Meaning this is the bottom of the cylinder, this is the top. They pulled the piston all the way to the bottom. They brought a scope in from the top, and they looked at this. The problem was that the piston down here covered up the worst part of the cylinder. It starts down here.
Down here.
Exactly. So
starts at the bottom.
If he didn't do that, that bore scope is trash. It's trash. You don't believe it. You do both of them. You come from the top and you come from the bottom, or you have not performed a bore scope inspection. Okay? That is worth its weight in salt, right?
Hey, Jake, so keep that right there. Let's explain to them why it's at the bottom of the sleeve that though you have the bore scoring start. You know, because at the very bottom, right, when the piston's hanging out the bottom down there, which it does hang out, right? People think it doesn't hang out. It does come partly out. And when you have the, at that point, the rod is on an angle. So it is trying to rock the piston against it. That's why it wears down there. When the piston's at top dead center, the rod's straight. There's no side load on it. So that's the reason why it's going to wear it down there. So it can look great, like you said, at the top of the bore. That means nothing. It's the bottom of the bore is where the piston will rock. That's where the bore scoring is going to start. That's where you have to look.
Yeah, so what you have to do is you have to put the piston at bottom dead center and come in from a spark plug hole to do half of your test. Then you go to the crankshaft pulley, grab a 24-millimeter wrench, rotate that piston up to top dead center, and you come in from the bottom and you look at the bottom side. Then you have an accurate picture of cylinder bore scoring possibilities for that engine. Until then, you haven't seen anything. Now, at the same time, you can look at that engine today. And it can look perfect. Tomorrow, it's mechanical. It doesn't have to look perfect anymore. If you look at it today, you have taken a snapshot of today. There's a reason why aircraft have inspections at certain points, right? Because they want to increase the amount of snapshots that are mm-hmm. taken of the overall status of that engine, of that airframe. Just like race cars, you do certain inspections. You replace rod bolts at certain hour points. We know what these things are going to be. So, you know, you can't just look at it today and think it's going to be that way. And it sounds like he kind of understands that because he's like, it had this done at 88,000, now it has 92. You know, that may be just one oil service interval for him. I'm not sure. That's within 5,000 miles. Maybe that is what he's doing. But he needs to do this test again. If it has not been done from the sump as well as through the spark plug hole, he needs to do it again. His engine is an M9721. It is the number two engine for failure with cylinder bore scoring. The number one engine for bore scoring at this date and time is the M9701 from 05 to 08. The Carrera S 3.8 liter is the number one bore score engine at this time, with the Cayman S, the Boxster S, 0708 Boxster S, being right behind it with its M9721.
So had he got a 2009 Cayman, it would have had the 9 Alpha 1.
In that point in time, it solved a lot of problems, right? It solved the IMS thing because it got rid of it, even though it kind of created some other problems with timing chain wear and some other stuff we've seen. But those engines are a lot better in a lot of ways. But now, instead of cylinder number six scoring, cylinder number one's the one that's been scoring. And yes, we are seeing them. Right now, the 9 Alpha 1 engines make up one half of our workload. Again, I will say, at Flat 6 Innovations, 9 Alpha 1 makes up one half of our workload. This is basically from February of 2010, when we built the first one to 4.2 liters and beat everybody else to the game. From then until now, it's taken all these years for it to make up one half of our load. Of those one half, 90% of them are number one cylinder failures, number one piston failures. The other 10% or so are elective builds. Guys just want to go big. Okay. So.
Well, like you said, it's the whole back to the fuel, diluting the oil, breaking the oil film. That's one of the things that initiates the scoring. So whether your engine's got 10,000 miles on it or 100,000 miles on it, if you begin to use poor quality fuel,
poor quality oil and you've got, you know, fuel contamination, then the likelihood of this happening is going to be much greater. You know, just because you've got a lot of miles on it, if the previous owner was doing all the right things, keeping the injectors clean, using good oil, changing it regularly, and you deviate from that diet, then things are going to change for you.
And I mean, I think a lot of this, people, they always want to be told, it's not going to happen to me, it's not going to happen to me. You're never going to get that from me. But at the same time, I will say, you know, the guys that have these M97 engines that have the later bearing, the larger bearing, your 06 to 08 cars, they're all worried about the wrong thing, guys. They're all worried about the wrong damn thing. I go on these Facebook pages, I'm worried about the IMS, I'm worried about the IMS. That is not what's going to take your engine out based on my direct experience, based on the facts as presented by me. And that is, you have a much greater chance if your car is a track car of breaking a connecting rod bolt. If your car is a street car, you have a much greater chance of a cylinder bore scoring issue taking that engine out. Don't worry about the bearing. Don't worry about pulling a seal. Don't worry about any of that. I've seen three of those later bearings fail since 2006. Three. That's it. Okay? I've currently got like 15 of these bearings sitting in the display case failed in front of me right now, and that's just what's been here for the last 6 years at the training facility. That's just, you know, that's a joke for us to have only seen three of those bearings fail. If you have one of those cars, you better be concerned with bore scoring and broken rod bolts.
That's all the time we have for this episode of RenCast. I want to thank you so much for watching. I hope that you consider subscribing to our YouTube channel as well as follow us on Facebook. If you prefer, you can listen to our podcasts on Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, to name a few. I hope you have a great day, and I hope to see you next time. Thank you.